Hello and welcome to the Permabyte for Monday, April 28th, 2014, presented by the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann. This episode is going to take us back to basics and begin a series examining the 12 principles of permaculture as presented by David Holmgren in his book, Permaculture, Principles and Pathways Beyond Sustainability. And this episode is sponsored by the Finger Lakes Permaculture Institute. You're invited to join them for their annual Permaculture Design Certificate course this summer from July 25th through August 10th, 2014, in an off-grid permaculture community in the gorgeous Finger Lakes region of New York. There you will immerse yourself in 15 days of instruction by qualified practicing permaculture teachers at real permaculture sites. The instructors are Michael Burns, Rafter Sass Ferguson, Steve Gabriel, and Karn Olson Ramanujan, those last three of which have all been guests on this show, so you can go and listen to what they've shared with us and get an understanding of what they're like as instructors. But the four of them will lead you through 84 hours of instruction and a rigorous design practicum to prepare you to design your own landscape, home, or project. You can learn more, watch videos, and follow their blog at fingerlakespermaculture.org. For podcast listeners who sign up and pay their tuition in full by May 1st, you'll receive a $200 discount off of this PDC. The first principle given to us by Holmgren is observe and interact, with the subheading, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. There's an icon in the book that looks like a tree when you first glance at it with a hole in it, but can also be interpreted to be a person with their arms outstretched up over their head. In the text, David writes, and I quote, "The icon for this principle is a person as a tree, emphasizing ourselves in nature and transformed by it. It can also be envisaged as the keyhole in nature through which one sees the solution." End quote. That image and this statement matter because we are a part of nature. Though we are human beings and can build the world around us, we still come from this world. And it raises a question about what is nature and what is natural. How would you define that? It's a big question. It's not easy. I had to answer that as part of a discussion for a class. And my answer to that was that nature and the natural world were those things not built by man. And yet there's a strange dichotomy there, as we are also animals and depend on the world around us for our safety and our well-being. For me, observing the world is a reminder of that I'm not separate or distinctly different. When I walk outside and the wind blows on my face, or I feel the sun warm my skin, or rain wet my hands, or dig in the earth, to sit in the grass and watch spiders emerge and crawl over me if I don't move, or as you find a sit spot and become a part of the world around you by going to that place regularly and sitting there, the animals come closer or become acclimated enough to your presence that you are an accepted part of that space and that you should be there. Observation for me in those cases connects me more with the world and allows me to see more patterns. Though I guess see isn't really the best word to use there, because it's not just with my eyes. There was a long conversation I had with some people before Easter where we sat down and were talking about ways of knowing and what is the truth. And it was interesting to see the perspectives of everyone involved in that conversation because of how disparate our backgrounds were. A friend of mine who comes from a Buddhist tradition, his way of knowing is not by naming, but just through experience and interaction with the world. Another participant in that conversation was looking at the world from a very ordered, almost deterministic way. And then I found myself a little bit more on the side of my friend with the Buddhist mindset, yet still in the middle of those two viewpoints, and looking at the way that we were using language to communicate and the way that that was influencing how we were able to understand one another and what that meant in our own ability to determine what is or isn't the truth. And I say that because of some of the conversations that I've had with Ben Weiss and Wilson Alvarez, because of their connection to the wild and the primitive skills and the time spent in nature in a way that I don't. And we've talked some about those different ways of knowing and different ways of observing, and how there's more to our interaction with the world than just the senses that we might normally think of. And I don't mean that in a spiritual or supernal way of knowing, but just the way that our senses can interact and perceive the world in a way that isn't necessarily conscious. When we make decisions that are based on that kind of a gut feeling, or making a choice in an instance, just needing to make a decision right now, and we do. Well, how do we do that? Is it off of instinct? Is it off of experience? I can't answer that definitively, but for me, it comes from the body of experience, which is where interaction comes in. I can sit here at my computer with all these incredible tools that are available through things like Google Earth and geographic information systems, and that information can be very helpful to supplement what we learn by reading the landscape, but to make use of that information, we still have to be reading the landscape, to be digging in the earth, to make mistakes. There's a line that Holmgren has as one of the headings for Principle 1 on page 17. Quote, "Failure is useful so long as we learn," end quote. I've found that to be incredibly true. One example that I can think of is in planting blueberries. When I picked up the blueberry plants, I sat and spoke with the nurseryman who I bought them from, asking about where to plant them, how, any suggestions. And he said that blueberries don't mind keeping their feet wet or to have some extra water around their roots. So around the Norway maple that's in my yard, that's very large and fairly mature, I planted the blueberries at the drip line. And for the first 2 years or so, that seemed to be pretty good. The place where they were at was on the northern side of the tree, but at the angle that the sun would rise over the summer, they got good sun. But I didn't take into consideration the ongoing growth of that tree. Because at first, in my ignorance, here was this tree that my notes and observations indicated was fairly done in its growth cycle. Over time, I was not expecting it to grow in such a way that it would shade out those bushes, and in turn take away that extra water that would rain down from the canopy. But it did. From that, I learned something, and I will change the way that I grow blueberries in the future. And there my cycle was to observe, which I did, and on personal reflection, was not perhaps the best observation at the time, as I was developing experience. I planted the blueberries and something changed. And the planting of those blueberries was my interaction. But because I continued to observe, I was able to see how that didn't work and find the failure and learn and correct from it. My last part on this, and I'll end with a quote from Holmgren here in a moment, is that I spend a lot of time concentrating on design. That's the part of permaculture that I get, that makes sense to me. Sitting down and brainstorming and making notes and coming from a very academic place, I can accept that for myself. And I'm very thankful for many of you who write in to me about the actions that you're taking on the ground, for all the time that I spend in books with paper and pencil. And it's a reminder for me that I need to spend more time to gain that body knowledge and to do more of this work. Because for all the design in the world, unless we do something, then it's for naught. And that brings me to, this quote from Holmgren on page 24 about the importance of interaction. Quote, "But unless we get out there and open our eyes and use our hands and our hearts, all the ideas in the world will not save us. Thus, the thinking and design revolution of which permaculture is a part only makes sense when it reconnects us to the wonder and mystery of life through practical interaction." End quote. And that's going to bring this Permabite on Holmgren's Principle 1, Observe and Interact, to a close. I'll join you again on Wednesday, February 30th, for another piece on permaculture and education. This one being a conversation with Catherine Herring about homeschooling on the homestead. If you have any thoughts, questions, or concerns from this episode, please let me know. show@thepermaculturepodcast.com. Give me a call, 717-827-6266. You can also join me for the conversations on facebook.com/thepermaculturepodcast or follow me on Twitter where I am @permaculturecst. Until the next time, take care of the earth, yourself, and each other.